Come on, Annie. Let's go to the movies.
This is the Cinerealist, episode 602. My name is Kyle.
My name is James.
And my name is Zach.
And we're here to talk movies, movie lists, and movie obsession for the next hour or so. Before I want to talk movies, though, I want to talk my everyone's favorite passion, especially mine, NFL football.
Okay.
Did you guys hear?
I didn't know you're a Swiftie.
Swiftie, yeah. Travis Kelce. He's great. He's going to get all the awards and all the bowls. Did you guys hear about the game that was streamed to Disney Plus?
No.
With the Toy Story skin on it?
Toy Story what? Skin? What does
okay.
that even mean?
All right. So today, the Jaguars and the Falcons played their game in London at Wembley Stadium, mm-hmm. which is like local my time was a 9:30 a.m. game. So it's mm-hmm. early. And Disney set up this deal where they live streamed the game to Disney Plus. However, it looked like it was being played in Andy's bedroom from Toy Story. And all the players were like CG, like bobbleheads running around this field. And there's like Toy Story characters in the stands watching the football game. So like somehow they're doing live motion capture of this game. And then you could watch on Disney Plus, like you're watching toys playing it.
What that is,
this looks pretty sweet.
That is wild. I'm pulling it up.
Yeah.
On
it is the most pleasant football experience I've ever had. Because one, there's no commercials. Like, so every time there was an ad break, they just would play trivia, like Toy Story trivia on the screen. Mm-hmm. I guess there is occasional ads for ESPN themselves because, you know, Disney, ESPN, they're all one company. But
what
did
they do
like,
during the downtime between plays?
So during the downtime between plays, like the commentators would be talking or they would like cut to like pre-canned animation of like Toy Story characters like cheering or doing something like that. The halftime show was Duke Kaboom, who did like a trick for the halftime. Hmm. And like, the commentators were great about explaining football. They would be like, oh, that's an offsides penalty. Offsides means, you know, when a player crosses the scrimmage line before the ball is snapped. And like,
so it wasn't the same commentators as like the live game.
No. These were special commentators for the game.
Hmm.
And like, you know, cause they would reference the Toy Story characters. Megan was mm-hmm. watching it and she was like, I really like that they're explaining football right now. So I will watch all games, future NFL games, if it's shown through a Toy Story lens, because it was an incredibly pleasant watch experience. Like, Galen totally got into it too.
That.
Oh, yeah. It was super fun. And I don't know the technology they use, but I was pretty impressive that they're using what seemed to be like real time motion capture or something along those lines.
Interesting. Yeah, would it be that or, because I know they already have like some kind of tags in the uniforms that keep precise locations on every player as they mm-hmm. play. But that wouldn't determine like which direction they're facing. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly. Or like if they're thing, so. Juking or something like that.
Right. I wonder if they're just live skinning the frames.
That
which would
they
be
could
pretty
be.
Wild.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, and there was hardly any technology issues. Like,
if you just had
good
two sensors in the helmet, one in the front of the helmet, one in the back of the helmet, that does most of the work.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, like, it definitely showed, unless they got the animations good enough to be like, okay, we know what direction they're running, so then we can make good running animation. Like, it felt, the players felt more dynamic than just, like, which direction are they facing and which movie are they, which direction are they going?
When they tackled each other, did they actually like wrap arms around and like pull somebody down, or was it just like two guys bumping into each other and then it's like, oh, one's down?
It was a little bit more bumping. So like the figures themselves weren't very articulated. They kind of look like bobbleheads running around. You probably saw in the videos.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I would bet it's like little stock animations for like all the different movements that are detected by the sensors. That's my guess.
Yeah.
Having not watched it.
Hmm.
There,
cool.
There are some side-by-sides on Twitter I saw of like the Toy Story broadcast and the live broadcast, and it was pretty close. So
what do you think the point of this is? To do it?
Yeah.
To train the next generation of football fans.
Right. I think it's to reach young fans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a pipeline.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I mean, I don't know. We live in a capitalist society, James.
Sure. No, I get it. I don't necessarily have like a big problem with it. I don't know. It's maybe the second most violent sport on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
What?
There's UFC? No way Galen's playing it. He's not playing football.
Sure.
So if he wants to watch it, that's fine. Yeah, UFC. I mean, boxing's pretty violent, too.
That's true.
You mean the sport where they punch each other?
Yes. But you're right. I think of like of the major sports,
mm-hmm.
it's either football or hockey. It seems like people get injured more often in football than they do hockey.
Yeah. I mean, I think hockey definitely has its violent moments, but the whole point of it is not to smash into each other. Now, people do smash into each other while playing yeah. hockey, but you don't win by smashing into people, typically.
You're not stopping the play by smashing into people.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, I see what you're saying.
You could.
No, but I mean, but once the puck is live, it's live. Like football, right. once the ball's dead, play stops.
Sure.
So you can smash into someone, but there's still a live puck flowing around that ice.
Yeah. But, you know, whatever. Whatever people want to do, I guess I'm okay with.
I thought it was cool, and it was pleasant. So. It was a nice way to spend my Sunday morning. Yeah.
Do you think kids are more likely to watch it with, you know, the skin on it versus the actual game?
I think younger kids are more likely to watch it with the Toy Story skin to it. I would imagine like 9, 10, 11-year-olds probably want to see the actual game with players.
It's still like a 3.5-hour affair, right? 3.5-4 hours.
Yeah, right, because they're not trimming anything. Like it's still more or less a live broadcast.
Yeah. I don't know about that. This does have parallels to one of the movies we're going to talk about tonight too.
Ooh,
which I find interesting. Specifically with Bottoms and what we're talking about right now, very similar. That's a joke. Creator has comparisons. We'll talk about it. Anything else before we jump into housekeeping?
No.
All right. I'm also curious how much they paid. Like, who paid who? Disney paid the NFL to do this, or the NFL paid them to do it, or seems, or they just called it even and they both chipped
ESPN
in?
ESPN owns the rights to showcase it, so I don't think they had to pay anyone.
You don't think they had a...
Because right. ESPN is Disney.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, does ESPN just have exclusive rights to broadcast however they want? Or is their contract to, like, you could do a live broadcast on Sunday mornings of the Wembley game, and then they have to go to NFL and be like, okay, so we want to do this Toy Story thing with it.
I bet they own exclusive broadcasting rights.
Okay. Interesting.
Would be in any form.
Yeah.
And like NFL doesn't have some control over what you can show, because like in this case there was there wasn't the uniforms, wasn't the stadium. Like,
if you
did not know that this was actual NFL teams, besides like they had like their logos on the bottom of the screen, nothing about this showed NFL.
Right.
I just don't know. Like how much NFL protects their brand.
I guarantee you, there's going to be like a Wall Street Journal article about this.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Right.
I will read that.
All right. Let's jump into housekeeping for this week. Don't forget there's a video version of this podcast on YouTube. Go check it out. youtube.com/@Cinerealists. Also, support us on Patreon, patreon.com/Cinerealists. Leave us an Apple Podcast review. 5 stars only. We'd appreciate that. Or send us an email to heyguys@cinerealists.com. Send a comment, a question, a list suggestion, a movie suggestion, a list, any of those kinds of things. We appreciate getting email and we'll talk about on a future episode of the podcast. You guys ready to jump into our double feature for this week of The Creator and Bottoms?
Let's do it.
Yes.
Let's do it. Starting with The Creator, which is in theaters now. We're going to get into it right after this clip.
She can stop it?
She's not ready yet. The range of her powers are still growing. But if we can get her up there, maybe she can destroy it.
How could anyone survive that?
She won't. But it will turn the tide of the war.
Does she even know what she's been created for?
彼女 何も 知らない.
That was The Creator, a 2023 American science fiction film directed by Gareth Edwards, who co-wrote the screenplay with Chris Weitz. This film stars John David Washington, Gemma Chan, Ken Watanabe, Sturgill Simpson, Allison Janney, amongst others. And the official IMDb plot synopsis is: against the backdrop of a war between humans and robots with artificial intelligence, a former soldier finds the secret weapon, a robot in the form of a young child. What did you guys think of The Creator?
I really want to hear what Zach thinks of this movie.
Oh, okay.
Well, I thought they chickened out with the name, because they maybe say The Creator once in the movie and they say Naimada like a million times.
Should this movie have been called Nimrata instead, do you think?
Nimrata?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we get into it, we should say there will be a spoiler-free version of this review, which is what you're listening to right now. And we're also going to record a spoiler version as well. So we will let you know when we make that transition and where to listen. So for right now, you're in the safe zone, the spoiler-free zone.
Yeah. Okay, so my basic thoughts. First of all, I'll talk about the presentation. This movie has a lot of world building and a ton of CGI. And I will say it is one of the few movies that I've seen that has relatively flawless CGI throughout. So there's an incredible amount of computer graphics. And for the most part, they are all very, very, very well done. It's very impressive to see it so artfully enmeshed in the movie.
So the thing that is a parallel to what we've been talking about with the NFL is I read an article with the special effects supervisor on this and the director. And from the article, the vast, vast majority of moving objects, like people and stuff like that on the screen, they shot with real people without knowing, as they shot it, who was going to be a robot, who was going to be a simulant, and who was going to be human. So they like put guys in helmets and stuff like that, and they just shot it. And then as in editing, they decided who gets the circle in the back of their neck. And when they wrote the script, they wrote everybody essentially the same. Like, they're all humans, according to the script. And then they made choices in the edit on who was going to be simulant and who was going to be. Now, there are specific people that were decided in advance, but if you see people in the background or some of the supporting characters, some of those people they changed on the fly because there was no script reason why they had to be one or the other type of thing.
And I think it's important to point out that this whole, there's no like secret simulants. This isn't the idea of our AI robots replacing humans. It's very clear who's a human, who is a simulant that is human appearing, but obviously has machinery in them. And then who is just a straight up robot who may have a personality, but it's, you know, just has mechanical arms and legs. Yeah.
But I think that's probably why it looked so amazing, is like when the robots are running through the forest, it's a dude.
It's
with
a,
his head replaced.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the body was filmed running through the forest and moving leaves out of the way and stuff like that. That's also how the movie cost $80 million, because it looks like $200 million, if not more.
When I read I read under 100. I was like, really? That's all they spent? That's very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Zach.
And it takes place, you know, like 40 years in the future. And so it has all this tech feels like some of it's aged by that point. And so there's a lot of world building. I don't know if it's all 100% like sensical. As far as the actual storyline and plot, I did enjoy all the acting. I thought the performances were good. The actual plot and themes and all that, I do kind of feel are maybe lacking. I think they're pretty shallow. And if you pull on any thread, I feel like it falls apart almost immediately. There's so many plot elements that don't make sense or don't add up. And yeah, so I think those aren't as strong. Unless you're just, if you enjoy it on a surface level, I'm along for the ride and it's fun. It's just, if you want to critique it, it's very critiquable, I think. But I thought I saw it in IMAX. It was fun to watch, visually stunning. Some interesting ideas in there. So yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I agree with a lot what Zach had to say. My first two notes are great world building and flawless CGI. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the world that this movie built. I want to talk about it a little bit in spoilers because I do think you can pick things of it apart. I think there's one element, a war-causing element, we could say, that I thought was didn't seem to make sense when you look into it. But I thought the idea of like how AI technology robots were incorporated into society and how the world sort of took different stances on being pro versus con on AI technology all made sense and was presented to me in a way that I could follow. And yeah, CG looked incredible. Can't complain there. There's a lot of ideas in this movie and I wish the movie had dived into them more. And it gave me, like you said, a base storyline of this human and this child simulant traveling together and, you know, what are the implications of AI, but it really didn't dive into like, how can this change the world? And, you know, are AI people or not? And like, what is a soul or humanity? Like, I feel like it presented these ideas, but never really wanted to go for them. Not that I wanted like a super philosophical movie. I was fine with this kind of being an action sci-fi movie. But I just kept thinking of Children of Men as I was watching this and how Children of Men was able to balance the action sci-fi world building with also the dramatic ideas. And this movie could do one of those things and could not pull off the other. There are also so many moments of characters just making what I thought were dumb decisions that took me out of it. And it was maybe like because Gareth Edwards wanted a cool shot or wanted to move the story along. But we can talk about these in spoilers, but there's just multiple times I was watching this movie like, why are they doing that? Like, that does not make any sense. Not beyond a suspension of disbelief sense. Like, just like that's just a stupid decision to make. And yeah. I just felt like this movie was rushing. Like, it had these key moments it wanted to get to and would just sort of, how do we quickly move to the next moment? And I think maybe that's where some of those ideas were lost.
Yeah, I mean, I think I generally agree with both you guys on what you liked about it and what you didn't like about it. Like, it's visually perfect for what it's aiming for, which is like a hyper realistic look at like a relatively near future, but with tech that we just doesn't exist in the modern world. Which he's really good at. Like, if you watch Rogue One, Gareth Edwards' Star Wars movie, that movie makes Star Wars look far more real than any of the other Star Wars movies. The other Star Wars movies kind of exist in this fantasy world, and there's certainly some of that built into Rogue One. But the battle on the tropical planet in Rogue One is the most warlike Star Wars has ever looked, for sure. Maybe it's not great for like high adventure, but the presentation is very specific when he does it. What were you going to ask?
Did the final battle of this movie remind you, the final land battle of this movie, did that remind you of that Rogue One battle also kind of in the beach forest, just in presentation?
I don't know if it reminded me like specifically, just that I got the same vibe from I think he presents these types of things very similarly for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I did like about this movie is that it is pretty deadly serious about what it is. You know what I mean? Like, for better or for worse, it's like, we're making a serious movie here that has all kinds of robots and replicants and humans doing weird things, but we're going to take it 100% serious and not be ashamed of that at all. It makes for like some of the smaller funny moments, like with the running bomb type stuff, where it's a little Looney Tunes, but also has some gravity to it. I think it highlighted the occasional moments where the silliness ramped up a little bit. And I enjoyed that. I agree that the story is like super basic for the most part. It's like, yeah. It's a very surface level movie. There's a couple times, where I got the feeling like an hour in that like they're just beating around the bush with what they were trying to say. And then they just had a character say a line that I'm sure we'll talk about in spoilers, where I was like, okay, there they go. They just laid it out for us. If you didn't understand what they were getting at yet, mm-hmm. they're just going to have this guy say it outright. I kind of enjoyed that and wished they had done that more with like other angles that I feel were in the movie, like from a, this is what we're trying to say perspective. But I feel like they left those out in the wilderness and they just focused on the one, which we'll get to in spoilers, I'm sure. But overall, I enjoyed it, but I did feel like I wanted more than just like pretty visuals and a storyline that has been done before over yeah. and over and over and over again, I would say. Like this movie is like a lot of sci-fi. It's like a little bit of Blade Runner, a little bit of Avatar, a lot of District 9. I got strong yes. District 9 yeah. vibes from this movie. Just substitute the aliens with robots, I would say. Not from a plot perspective, but from like a feeling like you're in a world perspective. Mm-hmm. But overall, what's on the screen, $80 million is freaking amazing. I mean,
he's always been good with a budget.
Yeah. It mm-hmm. kind of puts other big budget sci-fi movies to absolute shame to know that like that can be done with less than half of what they're doing it with.
Yeah. I just spent the whole time in the theater, like especially after like a first hour of like, mm-hmm. what else do you have for me, movie, besides cool visuals and sci-fi mm-hmm. action? And it never gave me that extra something else to really
some of the mysteries of the film. They remain mysteries a full 45 minutes after it's clear what mm-hmm. they are. You know,
yeah. There are a couple twists I'm going to put in air quotes, which did not surprise me whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple twists that like came out of nowhere, and yeah. I don't fully understand what the justification is.
Yeah. There were some that surprised me in that I thought they were going to go this more interesting way, and then they just went the most basic way they could. I was just like, oh, okay. Felt like you had an opportunity here to do something interesting, but instead you went with something that's already been done 50 times before.
James, I think you just took my biggest criticism and voiced it right there. It's just right. every time they can make the interesting choice. Yeah. Why not? Right. Yeah.
They went with something you've seen before.
Yeah.
I almost wish that they tried to do less, mm-hmm. but also go deeper and then yeah. make this like the most epic trilogy ever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's probably a good non-spoiler question. Do you want more of this? Or is this kind yeah, of I good do. Enough?
I do.
You do.
I am interested by this world.
Okay.
I don't know if I want more savior storyline, though.
Sure. Yeah, but, yeah. I think where the movie ends up, I don't really care.
Yeah.
Where the movie ends up.
Like,
there is a headcanon for the movie that I think really makes it much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so like there's a big event that we learn in flashback at the beginning that kind of kicks off this whole war. Mm-hmm. And then there's a throwaway line that talks about this big event, which seemed to like it was a world changing thing. And I'm like, can we go back into that? Because that seems fascinating. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like it seems like this whole war is over a big misunderstanding.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in spoilers.
Yeah. So I also really want to talk about the Nomad, the giant ship.
I liked it. I liked the blue light design. Yeah. Was cool.
Yeah. Okay. We can talk more about that in spoilers.
I liked it. The only thing I didn't like is they said it was $1 trillion, and that seemed
low.
Like not very much money.
it's considering like a Dr. Evil amount of money.
Floating city.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like okay.
I just could never get a sense of how high it was. It looked like it's pretty low in the sky, but it's in orbit or something.
It was suborbital. Mm-hmm. Because when they were up, they were like at the what's the line between space and atmosphere?
Is there a line?
Yeah, yeah. There's an official line for like when you are outside the Earth's atmosphere. It's like the Manjova line or something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, it seems suborbital, but it's right just because it was so huge, it was hard to tell. Like, was it 5,000 feet in the air, or was it 60,000 feet in the air? It just couldn't tell.
Yeah.
The exosphere?
Yeah. But there's like a line that you like, you know, it's obviously the imaginary line, but it's the
outermost layer of the atmosphere.
Yeah. So what's the line you cross when you go from the exosphere to space?
What is outside of Earth's atmosphere? Outer space, according to Google.
Okay.
I think you're asking the wrong question.
You can hop on Quora and find out what the answer is to this. So.
All right, I give up.
All right, we'll figure it out at some point. Maybe in spoilers we can talk about it.
Sure. Anything else to say about the creator? Do you recommend this to people? I kind of feel
Carmen
like...
Carmen line.
What's it called?
Carmen line.
Yeah, the Manjova line, exactly. The Carmen line. I knew there was a line. I could have heard what it was called.
I feel like if you're like a sci-fi person or maybe a big budget person, you know, big budget action type thing, I'd recommend this to you. But mm-hmm. if you don't really care about those things, I don't know if there's much here for you. Like yeah, the story's so basic.
It's not the next great sci-fi movie I was hoping it would be.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what this movie reminded me of? There used to be a TV show in the 90s, and I don't remember the name of it.
The Outer Limits.
No.
Okay.
It had the guy
X-Files.
Who was in Kung Fu. Do you remember that guy?
David Carradine.
It had David Carradine, and it was on Earth, and it was like aliens were like refugees on Earth, and they were treated as secondhand citizens. Do you remember that show?
Oh, yes. Keep talking.
That's it.
Okay.
You're talking about Circle of Iron?
No.
It was a TV show, right?
Yeah.
Are you sure it was David Carradine?
I'm not.
Okay. I just looked up David Carradine Alien show and nothing's okay. popping up right away.
Okay.
Alien Nation?
Maybe. Maybe it was Alien Nation. That's such a benign title.
What's the plot of Alien Nation?
The plot is, in the near future, a human cop and his alien partner fight crime and discrimination in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think it is.
That's Alien Nation. Okay. That sounds like it. Yes,
I'm looking at his skull tattoos, and it reminds me of that. Yeah.
Okay.
That's interesting.
And what specifically about this reminded you?
Well, it's just like these people are. These aliens live on Earth and they're like kind of accepted, kind of not. And mm-hmm. they're secondhand citizens. And it's like, what do we do with these people? And like all those kind of issues.
Okay. Hmm. Yeah. I want to talk more about that part of the world in spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
All right. I want to know if you'd recommend this to someone to see and two, what you Letterboxd rated it.
Well, James kind of asked that question already. would you recommend this movie to someone?
Yeah, and I said I would if I thought they'd like it, but if there's somebody who doesn't watch movies like this, there's nothing for them. The story doesn't, you know, what's the word? Outpace the sci-fi-ness.
Yeah.
So.
I agree.
Cool. Well, before we get into spoilers, let's letterbox rate this out of 5 stars. What are you guys going to give The Creator?
I'll give it 3 stars.
I'll go 3.5.
I am also a 3.5. So 1, 3, 2, 3.5s for The Creator. If you'd like to hear spoiler chat for The Creator and you're listening on a podcast app, just keep playing at the end of the podcast after the music. You'll hear us talk spoilers. If you're on YouTube watching this video and you'd like to jump to spoilers, just click the link in the description. Let's move on to Bottoms, which was recently released on video on demand. I believe it's in some theaters as well, if you want to see it in a movie theater with other people. But yeah. Well, we're going to get into it right after this clip.
I can't believe they're letting you guys start a fight club.
No, they're not. We are not.
What are you talking about? We're going to do it. We're doing it.
PJ, I wasn't being serious.
Josie, did you see the way that Isabel and Brittany were looking at us? Ugh. Also, you heard the announcements. Girls are terrified. It's perfect. They need this.
Okay, no. They need, like, mace, maybe. We can't do that, okay? We'd be misleading them.
Guys do that all the time, okay? That's the point of feminism.
That's not the point of feminism. You also don't care about feminism. Your favorite show is Entourage. You're missing the point. I don't really think I am. We don't know how to fight.
You guys probably fought girls in juvie.
No, we were lying about that, obviously.
About juvie?
Yeah, I mean,
why would you lie to me?
You were the one who said we went to juvie. I just didn't correct you.
Listen, self-defense is instinctual common sense. You try to punch me in the face, I stop it from happening. Whatever, I don't care. It's easy. Look, this is how we do this.
Okay, we start with taekwondo, which I've got covered. And then you guys can move on to air punches.
That was Bottoms, a 2023 American satirical teen sex comedy directed by Emma Seligman, starring Rachel Sennett, Ayo Edebiri, Ruby Cruz, Havana Rose Louis, Kaja Gerber, Nicholas Galzentine, or something. I probably got that wrong. Miles Fowler, Dagmar Dominizic, and Marshawn Lynch, of all people.
Right, Marshawn Lynch.
The IMDb plot synopsis for Bottoms is: two unpopular queer high school students start a fight club to have sex before graduation.
So sure. I have an issue with calling this a sex comedy.
Okay.
In the sense, because that like invokes to me American Pie or movies like that. Mm-hmm. And although this movie maybe has this setup of like, oh, we need to do X, Y, and Z to get laid before we go to college or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's actually no sex in this movie.
There is.
There is?
Yeah.
Sure there is. Maybe there wasn't comedy made out of it, but
okay.
There is.
Are you talking about the mom?
No, but there's that as well. But
okay,
No, I wasn't talking about that. To one me, it recalls more like an 80s sex comedy.
Oh, right. There is. Okay, you're right. There is one moment, but I guess it's not presented in a comedic way,
right?
Like I would expect. But even like an 80s comedy like Revenge of the Nerds or Porky's, I think those also present sex in funny situations.
When I think of a sex comedy, I think of like you have friends that all are just constantly thinking about sex,
right?
And like that's their motivations for the things that they do, and that's what this movie is.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably shades of sex comedies like Revenge of the Nerds and Ski Patrol, and you know, like those that 80s stuff is like, it's just a different style of sex comedy, I would say. That they've pretty much given up on making for the most part. Maybe those are like sexploitation movies. Mm-hmm. In a weird way, maybe not as exploitative as like a grindhouse style sexploitation movie, but all right, so Bottoms, you got two girls, they're in high school. very, oh, what's the movie with Michael Cera and
Superbad
guy? Superbad. Very Superbad-ish, I would say, in the premise. You got like these two kids who are relatively outcast in their high school, and they just want to get laid, basically. And in this scenario, it just happens to be two girls who are looking for other girls versus two guys who are looking for girls. So that's the setup for the movie. I'd say the tone in this one, as opposed to Superbad and like films like that, the tone in this one is like, this is not a normal reality high school.
No.
Like some kind of weird heightened reality high school where
yeah.
every cliche is taken to the max from frame one, which I enjoyed a lot. Like the satirical nature of the movie really got to me in the best ways.
That's what I found most surprising was the heightened world that these what seemed like normal characters lived in. Mm-hmm. Like they were not heightened at all. But then like the school they go to, the teachers they have, the football players who are dressed in like full football pads and cleats the entire movie. Mm-hmm. You know, the and how they're treated as gods. Like I'm sure you guys saw like the Touch of God poster behind the football players.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I really liked this heightened world that these girls existed in. This movie almost felt like a dark version of Barbie. In the sense it was hitting on a lot of the same themes of like patriarchy and how women feel in society and the danger they feel. I don't know. I just felt like this movie is like an odd companion to Barbie. Like if you liked Barbie and you want something with similar themes that just going a little darker and weirder, you could definitely enjoy this movie.
I don't disagree with that. I think Barbie is probably a little safer than this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said this movie is darker and weirder than Barbie. Like,
sure. Yeah. But I would say by like measures.
Yeah, by orders of magnitude. This is more like Heathers. Wouldn't you agree?
Sure.
You never finished that one. Well, I don't know. How I know Heathers was made in late 80s, and it's a black comedy, but like just watching Heathers and how it cavalierly handles the idea of school shootings in that time, like in a modern lens, it was just too weird for me. I just couldn't get into that. So
I was really surprised at how cavalierly this movie, like intentionally so, but talks about like sexual assault and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it really just makes them throwaway kind of jokes. And it's interesting because no other movie would touch it like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, this movie does get fairly serious at times in some of these conversations between these group of girls who are in this fight club. And then goes back to its weird heightened world.
I don't know. I would disagree. I don't think it ever really gets serious. It talks about serious things in a very casual way.
Okay. Okay.
That's how more I would frame it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I found this movie to be very, very interesting. And like you said, the heightened world, the like the extreme version of everything, that like seeing everything through like a different lens, I thought was the best part of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty wacky, I would say. And that surprised me, just the level of wackiness that was going on, because I kind of expected it to be more like Booksmart, where it's like,
right.
I mean, even Booksmart has like the weird tripping scene, the claymation scene. But for the most part, Booksmart like lives in the normal world as we know
it's grounded. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas this was just like an alternate reality, high school situation. And, that's probably what kept it interesting for me. I was also pretty aware as I was watching it that I am really old and that the people that made this movie did not make it for 45 year old white dudes, I would say. And I still found things to enjoy in it. Certainly I wasn't offended by any of it or anything like that, but I was just like, maybe the cavalierness to sexual assault was like maybe that's how people feel when they have grown up with it. And it's like, it's just a part of life type of thing. Like that perspective is very different than like the way I hear those things talked about. But also I'm not a female in her early 20s who has lived in the digital age at all type of thing. So it's definitely not a perspective where I writing and making a movie, I would ever dream of approaching that topic in that way. But in this movie, they just do, and it's fine type of thing. And that was kind of interesting. It was probably the most interesting thing about it to me was that a lot of their approach to situations that I've seen in movies that were made 20 years ago, 30 mm-hmm. years ago, 40 years ago, had an interesting point of view that I hadn't necessarily considered anybody would ever depict it in that way. Type of thing. Even like the macho football player had a perspective on it that I think is an assumed perspective. If you think about it, even through the lens of 30 or 40 years ago, you just never saw movies go that far with it type of thing. And this movie definitely liked to go far with everything that it did. And that's what made it interesting to me. I also just love Rachel Sennett and Etta Beery. Like they are having a moment for sure, at least in my viewing world, between The Bear and Ayo Etta Beery and that show, and then Rachel Sennett and Shiva Baby and being the best part of Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
I agree there. Yep.
They're just fun to watch on screen, and they seem like I mean, this movie has a blooper reel during the credits. You know what I mean? It was great.
Like, and didn't they write this movie?
Rachel Sennett wrote it with the director, I believe.
Yeah.
This is definitely a movie where it's in that Judd Apatow production style, in the fact where I think there's a lot of improv going on, and they were just trying to take what was some of the best lines and throw them in the movie.
Yeah. I also really liked the music too. The music was fun. There were like a couple throwback tunes. Oh, we didn't talk about the music and the creator. It was really interesting.
Yeah, it was Hans Zimmer.
It was, no, I'm not talking about the score. Like they played like half of a Radiohead song in the middle of the movie.
Oh, yes. Okay.
It's like, where is this coming from?
Since we're going to circle back to the creator really quick, another movie pet peeve I have is in sci-fi movies, whenever they're always listening to like classic rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want a movie that takes place in the future to give me future music.
You consider Radiohead classic rock?
I'm pretty sure Radiohead's like on classic rock city. Radiohead was big like 20 years ago, James. I know they're still kind of relevant, but like classic rock radio is now creeped into the 90s.
Plus this is 2060.
Yeah.
I guess it's classical. It's certainly classic rock for their time. I think Radiohead's on the edge, though, of classic rock, I would say.
Okay, but
just because 90s music is playing on classic rock does not mean it's classic rock.
Well, did they play the Radiohead in this? It wasn't straight Radiohead, right? They added like a little futuristic.
No, that's the song.
That's the song.
That's the song. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah.
Okay.
I guess that's a 23-year-old song or something like that. So anyway. I don't know. I want my sci-fi movies to at least try and give me like, oh, yeah, here's music that people actually listen to in this world.
Not to go back, but I think my problem with calling Radiohead classic rock is that
did James have balloons go across?
I did not do a single thing.
James, you just had balloons launch.
I literally have my hand right here and my other hand here. I haven't touched a single thing. One of you guys did that.
I don't know how to do that.
Nobody's going to be able to see it because it was in Zoom and not on my video. Oh,
that was amazing.
I wish that.
Anyway, the point is,
why did you
rock music hasn't changed in the last 20 years for there to be any difference between what's coming out today and what Radiohead was doing 20 years ago. That's my issue with being on classic rock stations. Anyway, the music here was like Charlie XCX. It was like young pop music.
Right.
And I enjoyed that.
I think Charlie XCX, like she was credited with the original score.
Oh, she actually wrote like score. There's definitely some songs of hers in there.
Yeah.
But
in the credits, I saw music by Charlie XCX and another person. So I think she was doing some of the actual scoring as well as having her music in there. And there were some throwbacks like Total Eclipse of the Heart came up, which I thought was used well. So, now Zach's messing around with backgrounds. He's trying to
try not to get distracted. To
take an organic moment and make it inorganic.
No, you're the one even talking about it. Just let it go.
The biggest surprise of this movie for me, though, because I kind of expected to enjoy the movie in general. I expected that Rachel Sennett and Ayo Edebiri would be fun. But I never would have guessed Marshawn Lynch would make me laugh as much as he did in this movie. Like, I didn't even realize he was in it until he was on screen. And then I was like, who is this guy? And then, I pulled up Wikipedia, as I've been wont to do. And I was like, why is there a football player in this? But he was hilarious in this.
You didn't recognize Marshawn? Like, you haven't seen him in other things before? Like, not in other movies, but like other YouTube clips and things?
I'm sure I have, but I don't care about football.
Okay. Do yourself a favor. And look up, remember Conan O'Brien used to do something where he'd have people come play video games, like celebrities would come play video games, and he would just comment on them playing it?
Yes.
So there's one, I believe it's Marshawn Lynch and Rob Gronkowski are playing like Mortal Kombat together or something like that in front of Conan O'Brien. Clueless Gamer, that's what it is.
According to YouTube, I've watched this, but it was 8 years ago.
Okay, watch the Marshawn Lynch Clueless Gamer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like I said, I know of him. I'm sure I've seen him. I just don't live with Marshawn Lynch in my brain 24/7. So, but I thought he was really, really funny in this as kind of a straight man.
Yeah, he definitely... I don't know, like he takes a comedic take after the girls betray him, we'll say.
Yeah. And I also really liked the finale.
At the football game?
Like how that all came together. Mm-hmm. And they actually like tied up little threads and the pineapple juice of it all and that type of stuff was just so goofy and fun to watch them try to figure out how to put this all to bed. I enjoyed it.
I'll tell you the moment that got me on board this movie, and when I realized this is going to be kind of weird, but I'm going to like it. It's one of the first scenes that takes place in a classroom, and like Rachel Sennett and Ayo Edebiri walk into a classroom. I think this was after maybe a football player got hurt, and like the bell rings and everyone's talking about like, ooh, how this player got hurt and what happened. And the scene takes like 3 minutes and then the bell rings again. And the teacher says, all right, class, that's enough for today. And Rachel said, it's like, that's it.
Sure.
And that was the moment where like, oh, okay. I'm in on this movie. It doesn't even care.
One thing this movie does really well is it'll have throwaway jokes in the background.
Sure.
That you'll see for like 3 seconds. And it has the restraint to not then show a close up of it like 4 shots later, you know, many comedies, like they don't want to waste a joke. And so you'll notice it. And then like 30 seconds later, there'll be a close up of it to make sure you saw it. And this movie has a ton of things written on the walls and people in the background doing something silly. And you could really just enjoy yourself watching the background of a lot of these scenes. But it does not telegraph any of those things throughout the whole movie. And I thought that showed a lot of restraint.
I also liked how they didn't necessarily ease you into the fact that this is going to be a heightened reality. But like that scene with the car and the football player standing in front of the car happens pretty early. And you're like, what? Why is everybody treating this like a serious injury? You know what I mean? And that builds into, it's because everybody idolizes football players and specifically this one guy. And then later on you realize like every time you see him with the crutches, it's like, why is he still milking the crutches thing? And then like maybe 20 minutes into the movie, they show him cheering in the background and like throwing his crutches to the side and everybody loves him for not needing the crutches anymore. And it's like, it's kind of like a built ridiculousness that they have multiple jokes that ran throughout the movie that I liked how they It was wacky from frame one, but I think they strategically amped it up over time.
For sure. Yeah.
Or built on jokes. Yeah. There were like Mean Girls in there. There's all kinds of influences, I would say, throughout it, but none of them felt like it was leaning hard on those things. Maybe that's the difference between like Creator and this movie. There's lots of differences, but one of the differences is like, I felt the Blade Runner-ness of the Creator. Mm-hmm. If you were to remove the Blade Runner-ness, it would not be the same movie. Whereas with this one, I think you could pull an inspiration out of it and it would still be itself at the same time.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that they're both movies that try to create a world that's familiar to all of us and still try to make it unique. I'm trying to think of what else would relate them to each other. You know, the whole AI business, that's similar in this both movies.
Oh yeah, when they reveal that Ayo and Barry was actually a robot at the end.
Right. Yeah.
That
was wild.
No idea. Yeah.
Didn't see that coming.
I watched this movie with Megan.
Okay.
What do you guys think she thought of it?
I bet she liked it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think she liked it. But yes, I think she liked it.
She did not.
Okay. Why?
It was a little too heightened for her.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think maybe a little on the dark side.
Did she not like it enough that at 45 minutes she was like, are you going to turn it off or me?
Oh no. Like she never, during the entire movie, she never like complained or was like acting bored or anything. Uh-huh. But I could just tell, like, she wasn't laughing at jokes. I could just tell by her body language. Like, I don't think you're enjoying this, but I didn't want to say anything to like, you know, take her out of it. We got to the end and she's like, I don't think I liked that. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, why? She's like, oh, it's a little weird, a little dark. And then her next question was, did A24 make this? And I said, no. She goes, well, they could have.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it would have been their best comedy, I would say, if they had made it.
Right. It definitely has A24 feels to it.
Yeah. There's really not many good A24 comedies that I can think of. Like, we watched that Pizza Slice movie. Remember that?
So bad.
That was a comedy. I'm trying to think of any others. I know they have a couple of them, but I can't. There's not too many of them, and the ones they have are not great, I would say.
I would say Swiss Army Man has comedic moments.
Sure.
But it's not a straightforward comedy.
Same with, didn't they also do Everything Everywhere?
Yes, that also has comedic moments. But
I would say that's a comedy first.
Is Lady Bird a comedy?
What? Lady Bird?
Is Lady Bird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drama, comedy.
Is that A24?
Drama. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Maybe
there's
Lady
a couple
Bird
good ones
there. Yeah.
But there's also some bad ones mixed in there, I would say. All right. Anything else with this movie, with Bottoms, that we need to talk about? I would recommend, just because I finished season two, if you're not watching The Bear yet, go watch The Bear.
I am all in on that show, and I like that season two is not just like a, hey, season one worked really well, let's do that again. It's an actual like moving forward of the story and the characters,
mm-hmm.
while still able to capture the same magic and still wanting to be around these characters, even though they are growing and changing.
Yeah. That episode where the brother goes to the 3-star restaurant and he learns for a week.
Oh yeah.
That episode is so good.
I wear suits now. Like, oh, okay, great.
Yeah. It was funny and interesting. And when they're doing like the staff meeting and they're talking about the people that are coming to visit them, I got chills during that scene. Probably the best TV writing I've seen in a long time.
Yep.
But Ayo Edebiri is a big part of that show and she's great in it and not really being funny in that show at all. She's being serious for most of it. All right. Anything else with Bottoms? Are we ready to letterbox it? 5 stars. What are you guys going to give it?
I give it 4 stars.
I will also give it 4 stars.
I'm also a 4. 4 stars. all around for bottoms. Thank you for joining us for this episode 602 of The Cine Realist. We appreciate your listenership. Don't forget, you can always send us an email to heyguys@cinerealist.com with a comment, question, list suggestion, movie suggestion, those kinds of things. You should also follow us on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok at Cinerealist, or you could follow me on my personal Twitter or Letterboxd account at EOJRB.
You can follow me on Twitter or Letterboxd at Shobin.
You can find me on Letterboxd at PeterSKB.
Next week, we will be watching the film Flora and Son, which is by director John Carney, a.k.a. the Sing Street director, also directed Once, which is Zach's top 10 movie?
That's like number
that's my
three?
Fourth favorite film of all time.
Okay. Fourth favorite film of all time. So this is, so would you say this is a highly anticipated movie for you?
No. I'm excited for it, but I don't think I'll like it as much as Once or Sing Street.
You don't think you'll like it more than your number four favorite movie of all time?
Exactly.
So I don't think so thinking, you will either.
Exactly. So I'm going in thinking this will be my third favorite John Carney film, which is, you know, how excited can you be about that?
But what if you did like it better than Once?
That'd be fantastic.
I think it could get there. I'm not trying to build it up or like, you know, create an unnatural expectation, but I'm pretty sure this is going to be your favorite movie ever, Zach.
Okay. Well,
it's a failure.
You're not doing a great job of creating that anticipation in me, if that's the goal, but keep trying.
Zach, I've seen this movie already, and it is possibly the greatest film ever made
by John Carney
ever. I movies can stop now.
I'm amazed you could tell that after just 45 minutes.
I didn't need any more than that.
Yeah. You're like, I'm loving this, and you turn it off.
I'm loving this. Cinema's over.
It can only go downhill from here.
All right, so meet us again next week for that. We'll see you there. Until then, keep it cine-real.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
This is spoiler chat for The Creator. If you have not seen The Creator and you want to stay spoiler free, then you should not listen or watch this. You should do something else and come back to it after you've seen the movie. Or maybe you don't care about spoilers, or you've seen the film and you just want to hear people talk about it. Then listen on. What do we need to spoil about The Creator?
Well, let's talk about the bombing of LA.
Yes.
The what?
The nuking of LA.
Okay. Give us some background for people who haven't seen the movie.
Sure. So in the film, it pretty much starts with the AI robots have randomly detonated a nuclear bomb in the middle of LA, killed a million people. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the entire Western world has banned AI and destroyed them. But New Asia hasn't banned AI. And so it's kind of like the Western world versus the Eastern world.
Yep.
And the whole movie is about the Americans trying to take out the central figure of the AI movement or whatever in New Asia. They the American side explained the bombing of LA as an act of aggression, you know, like a surprise attack, basically. And that's why they're so dangerous that we need to ban AI. Mm-hmm. And then we're not given an explanation beyond that until kind of randomly towards the end of the film, one of the robots says the bombing of AI wasn't our fault. It was a human coding error.
Right. Yeah. Ken Watanabe's character said that.
Right. And personally, I think that makes no sense.
Why?
Okay. So I'll say a couple things. One, let's say it was a human coding error, right? Mm-hmm. I still think America was justified in what they were doing in like getting rid of AI, because even if it was a mistake, if mistakes of that like nature are possible, then it's too dangerous to risk it, right? How do you know you don't have more coding errors that will accidentally kill millions of more people? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And so like, even if it was like our mistake, it doesn't matter whose mistake it was. If a you wouldn't have something that's capable of killing millions of people on a mistake.
So, okay. So he was saying that like AI detonated the bomb, but because the humans coded us to do it incorrectly. Is that how you interpret the explanation?
That is how I interpret it, which is my second problem.
Okay.
My second issue is the whole point of the AI's perspective is that they have agency, right? They're not just programming. They're not mindless robots. They are like sentient beings that deserve to have civil rights. But if the human coding of them is so
influential
over their own agency that they can't help but kill a million people, then they don't have agency. That they are just programming and robots, right? Like either they have to do what the programming tells them to do, and that's why they bombed it, because they didn't have control, or they have personal agency in which they wouldn't have bombed LA. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Like, this movie didn't want to go the Terminator route where like Skynet turned on us.
Right.
This movie, it wanted it both ways.
It had them say, this was not our fault. We're being falsely accused of something. Mm-hmm. We're just fighting for our lives here. And as soon as you end the war, we'll be at peace. But I don't understand how the bomb went off then.
Yeah, it's. I agree. The movie explanation to me seemed like someone just put the wrong code in and it detonated a bomb. They didn't really go into like how the AI was involved into it. And I agree, it doesn't make sense once you hear that explanation of it's a coding error. Because then, are they artificial intelligence anymore? Or are they just virtual intelligence?
Yeah. If they're just following programming, then they really are just off. They're not dead, you know, when they die.
I mean, they are, even the ones that are sentient, they're just following programming, right?
I mean, well, you can say that we're just following programming, and our programming is to learn and to grow. Like,
sure.
The question is, what is programming?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is a deer just following programming of fight or flight? Like,
I think the idea is that once they get consciousness and sentience, then they also have agency and free will.
Yeah.
So they don't have to strictly go off of programming or instinct, but they're able to choose against their programming.
Hmm. Okay. I don't think that movie made arguments one way or the other as far as that's concerned. Whether they could override programming or not.
Do you think the movie made the argument that they had they deserved rights because they were as much persons as a human?
I think so, because there was one line at some point in the movie where, you know, someone said, oh, their circuit brain is no different than our human brain. Like the number of electrical connections. Like, our brain is a circuit just in organic form. It was essentially, it was one of those throwaway lines. And I think I thought that was an interesting idea the movie was presenting, which it did not run with. But yes, I think the movie was presenting the idea of that they're no different than humans, because how our brains work be it organic or circuit wise, is the same.
I think the movie was definitely in roundabout ways making these arguments, but it wasn't trying to make the plot of the movie about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was, but not like as directly as probably I would have liked.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the climax of the movie is like they're going to win their independence or win their right to live, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, okay, so I want to talk about Nomad a little bit.
Yeah.
So, A, like their way of winning the war was to destroy Nomad, which is a weapon, but it's not going to change the Western world's ideas, right? If anything, destroying Nomad is going to make the Western world say, look how big of a threat they are. We have to go even harder on these AI.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I was just curious to know, like, how did Nomad seem to operate, like, without impunity in New Asia? Because at the beginning of the movie, there was like a colonel or general in a flashback who said, like, we are not at war with New Asia. We're at war with the AI. Right. However, this Nomad thing is in New Asia. It is flying over what I'm guessing is sovereign space, you know, or sovereign territory. And I don't think it's killing just AI. It's probably killing residents and humans, too,
for sure.
So like I was just watching this. I'm like, how is New Asia not saying, like, you can't just fly your death machine over our country and kill whoever you want?
New Asia is definitely saying that, but there's nothing they can do about it because they don't have a Nomad.
Okay. So that was some of, like, the world building I was more curious about, of, you know, like, how can this, I mean, American, North American, Western, whatever you call it, fortress just sort of act however it wants to anywhere in the world.
Yeah, sure. They're just acting with impunity.
They definitely say Americans. There's like a pretty strong, like, Americans are vengeful streak.
Oh, yeah.
In this movie, I would say.
They showed what Nomad stood for at one point, and it's like North American outer missile something. I can't remember what it was, but yeah. So I don't know. I just thought that was a little fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So my headcanon for the movie that I think makes it a much more interesting movie, and I totally believe this given the facts of the film, is that the AI is lying to the main character, David Washington.
How so?
You mean the child is lying?
Yeah, we haven't talked about the child at all.
Yeah, the child and Ken Watanabe and everything. When he says, like, the bombing of LA was a mistake by the humans or something like that, I think that he's lying to him.
Okay.
I think that's propaganda. Because honestly, he just says that. And let's say he was, like, evil or trying to destroy humanity or something like that. Like, of course that's something he would say, right? And it totally worked. It convinced the guy to help them, and he absolutely helped them destroy Nomad, and now what's going to stop them from taking over? There's no reason to believe that they're benevolent in any way.
Especially if they see how the Western world reacts to them. Are they just going to say, okay, war's over, all's forgiven? Or are they going to say, no, if we want to survive, it's like the Neanderthal comparison they made earlier in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, we have to take over.
That would certainly be a twist, but that is not what the movie has set up from a tone perspective.
No,
like, they make the Americans be the ones that are overreacting and the vengeful, you know, attackers, and the AI is definitely the one on their heels, the one that the Americans are trying to eliminate. So that would be, they'd be twisting the entire tone of the film.
No, I totally agree. That is not what the movie wanted to sell. The movie wants, what my friend said, we love an underdog story so much that it doesn't matter if we're the bad guys in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just want to root for an underdog.
Sure. My biggest issue with the movie was just, like, things that seemed, I don't know if this would be more interesting, but at one point I was thinking, oh, the kid is like the first robot mixed with human DNA or something like that.
And the
or
first like grown child from AI. A baby. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
One that will age over time. Now, I vaguely feel like maybe they said that, but
he's going to grow up and age.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. So does that happen with all AI?
No, he's
the first of his kind.
He's the first one. So that's another thing that bothered me, is he's the first of his kind. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
This movie kept bringing me back to Children of Men, just because I saw the parallels. Remember in Children of Men, there's like that final battle. It's one of those 11-minute shots. It's in like in the slums. Mm-hmm. And it's this chaotic battle. And all of a sudden, the baby starts crying. And everyone just stops fighting because no one's seen a baby in like 20 years. I was thinking there would be a moment similar to that of like AI and humans seeing like, oh, this is an AI child, like, which is no one has ever seen in the world before. And what does that mean? And like, people are just like, oh yeah, that's Alfie right there. Like robots would meet, or AI, whatever, would meet Alfie for the first time and just be like, oh, okay, cool. That's the weapon. And
sure.
No one just seemed to like understand the gravity of the fact that this is a grown AI building. Like, this is maybe the next step in evolution past just robots. Like, how do we bridge organic and mechanic into one thing?
Yeah. Here are some more of the things that I think just make no sense if you think about it for more than a second. So he marries this woman named Maya.
Maya, yes.
And she just happens to be Naimada, the creator, right?
So she's Naimada's daughter. Like, I think.
Right, but when he dies, she becomes Naimada.
Yes, correct. But like, it's not coincidence that he marries her. Like, he knows that that's Naimada's daughter.
But it's coincidence that she sure. But
okay. Keep with your point. Yeah, sorry.
he marries Naimada, who is this like genius AI scientist, right? They get married and pregnant. First of all, I have no idea why she is so cavalier with her security to like marry an American who just happens to be special forces that are like hunting Naimada. I just think that she would take a little bit more caution in vetting people.
But she thinks he's ex special forces. She even said, "I thought you were out."
Right, but they're at war with America.
I know.
And, like, yeah, he just happens to be this American. Anyways,
I totally agree. I totally agree. Yeah,
they get pregnant, and her plan is she clones the fetus without telling him. And is growing it and making this like simulant fetus, mm-hmm. like at the same time. And then what's the plan? Like, it's going to be born, and then she's going to raise it along with her human child as like twins. And like, then she'll tell him. Like, at what point is she going to tell him that she's growing this other baby?
And at what point does she decide to make it a weapon that had like essentially telekinetic EMP powers? Like, it never quite explained its powers.
And she's so genius that not only can she create the first ever like growing fetus robot.
Yeah.
But she can also imbue it with the ability to control all technology. Those are like separate innovations.
Right. Yeah.
And she can do both of those secretly in her lab without her husband noticing she's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's when his whole role there is to like keep secret tabs on her.
But he's got the wedding ring on her. How can he lose track of her?
Yeah.
It's like there are multiple times when characters just did things which I thought were so stupid. Mm-hmm. Like when that first raid, and you know, he tells Maya, "Hey, go upstairs," and then he gets on the phone and like calls the people calling the raid and be like, "What are you guys doing? I'm undercover right now." Like, why would? And of course, she happens to hear that. It's just, I just can't imagine any conversation going down like that, where the person undercover like calls the raiding army and says, "You guys gotta stop, I'm undercover right now."
They should really invest in some code words.
Exactly. Or yeah, I think if you are undercover and a raid happens, you gotta kind of play along until you're in your own private room, and then you can like talk it out with people.
Yeah. And then you describe Nomad as suborbital, but didn't he like turn off the power? Like, why is it still floating?
No, it crashed to the ground.
No, but like before it crashed to the ground, like when it, like,
stay where it's at.
Yeah.
Why? Oh, because, well, okay, so maybe, well, how low can you be
to the be orbit?
Yeah, like it's, I'm guessing it's wherever Starlink is. Like, Starlink is at, or maybe it's in low orbit. Maybe not suborbital is the right word. Maybe it's a low orbit.
It just seems so much, didn't it seem like, yeah, 3,000 feet off the ground?
It was really hard to tell how far away it was, because right from the ground, it looked not that far away. And then you're on the thing and it seems like you're on that Kramer line.
Carmen.
Carmen line. Thank you. Carmen line. Yeah. There's a moment where they're on the, remember that, like, there's a bridge between the AI, the whatever, the AI who are defending themselves, and then like where Allison Janney and her group is. And she says one of those running robots, like the bomb robots, which at one point, did one of the like bomb robots seem to refuse to like want to do its mission?
No.
It seemed like it was scared. Like it didn't want to do it. And then they said something and it actually did it. But
oh, I don't know if that so? Was. I thought it was happy to do it.
Maybe I just missed the situation. I couldn't tell.
Well, she like deactivated it.
The girl did.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, anyway. So yeah, the girl, like Alfie, deactivates this robot. Everyone's like, this is the first time people are seeing her powers in the real world. And then Allison Janney says to like her right-hand man, hey, go get that kid. So she sends like one guy across a bridge when there's 12 people with guns on the other end of it. And that's what, that one of those moments where I was like, no, like you send your entire force over to like go get this weapon. You don't just send one guy to, I don't know. There were so many of these moments of just stupid decisions to either move the story along or to like make the movie look cool that just pulled me out of it or seemed silly. The final one that stood out to me, when Allison Janney was like, she calls John David Washington after the raid goes wrong and she's like hacked into a telephone pole or something like in the middle of the road. Mm-hmm. And then like she gets arrested immediately. And I was like, really? Like, why? Like, you're supposed to be this incredible, you know, like special forces leader and your plan is to hack a telephone pole in the middle of the enemy. I don't know. So those moments kept happening and just kept pulling me out of what was, could have been a really interesting movie.
I thought it was interesting, her hacking a normal looking telephone pole. I mean, if she hadn't gotten immediately captured, you wouldn't have had a second thought about that. I bet.
I guess so.
I think that's what kept it realistic to me.
That she got,
I like them being able to download the last thoughts of someone and then implant them in someone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool.
But that was another moment where it seemed like they were trying to, I thought they were going the direction, like after Maya had died,
mm-hmm,
and then they downloaded the thoughts and Alfie has it. Then Alfie goes to like one of the Maya robots to try and like upload, you know, essentially her mother back into it. I'm like, oh, this can be a nice conclusion. Like, you know, Alfie gets her mother, gets to live, you know, if he's not her mother, it's whatever, it's a robot version. But then like she gets impatient that it's not working fast enough, so she runs away. just so we get this nice moment at the end of like John David Washington embracing his wife as they both die. Like it, sure. Again, it's the wrong one ending, but it's not one of those things where it just seemed like Gareth Edwards had these cool ideas, but didn't know how to get there. So he just goes, then she'll do this and run away, and then whatever.
Why did Nomad have a Maya robot on it?
Well, there was lots of Maya robots.
That's what I thought too.
I didn't understand that either.
And I thought those were all just robots for examination. Like maybe they were captured by Nomad for studying, because like weren't there a whole bunch of them covered in sheets or something in some room?
Mm-hmm.
That just seemed like a preservation thing to me.
Okay,
they're brand new and haven't been opened yet.
But why would Nomad have those in the first place?
That's a great question.
They're anti-AI.
Yeah, but they clearly use AI anyways. Like with those running robots. Like, I think they secretly have AI as weapons.
See, that would have been like a cool reveal. Like Allison Janney is AI. Or something like that. I don't know. Like, they could have done some.
Allison Janney's kids, she said one of them like died because she was tricked by AI and then they like cut off his face.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Why did they AI cut off his face?
To where that face is.
Yeah, but
it's a real face off situation.
But they don't have to take faces to do that because people donate their likeness, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they don't need actual faces. They just, people donate them. So I didn't understand that. Anyone have an explanation for that?
I don't remember that moment. I remember her talking about her kids joining the war because she was in the war.
Yes. It was in that moment that she said that they, her surgeon friends went at him or something.
Oh, that's the Yeah, that's just weird because we didn't see the AI acting with malice very often.
Yeah. It just didn't make sense because they fabricate the faces.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Anyways, there's just a lot of these things that like they put in these lines that sound cool, but the second you think about them, just they don't connect.
Yeah. Agree.
Gareth Edwards also gave a list of movies that this movie was inspired by. Why don't I read some off to you and you tell me if you see the inspiration in this movie?
Please.
Apocalypse Now.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess so.
What, like the Jungle War scene type stuff?
I think he was thinking more of like, oh, this is a guy going like deep into the heart of darkness to go on a mission, but it felt like a pretty normal mission.
Sure. You know? Baraka.
Oh, the documentary?
Mm-hmm. I don't see Baraka here.
Not really. No.
I think maybe some of like the Buddhist temples and stuff like that. I could see some visual.
Maybe. They didn't have any rituals or anything going on.
That's true.
I did think it was interesting to see some of the AI wearing like Buddhist robes, like monk robes.
Yeah.
And like do they have religion? That's interesting.
They did, because sure. Did you see the robot statues they had in the temple?
Oh, yeah, they did. That's right. Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, this movie, like, even the straight robots had human bodies, and we've learned that's because they were human, and they just
right.
skinned the head. But that's interesting that, like, a Star Wars movie literally just has a robot. You know, they never put them in human clothes for the most part.
Yeah.
Blade Runner seemed obvious.
Oh, yeah, especially, like, when there are some of the cities.
Akira. Anybody remember enough about Akira?
It's been, no. I've not seen Akira in a long time.
Right.
I mean, again, same maybe here. Some of the city design was in Kieran's, was inspired by Akira, but I feel like Akira was also inspired by Blade Runner. I feel like a lot of sci-fi dystopian movies are inspired by Blade Runner. So it's hard to say which one exactly.
Rain Man.
Because it's a travel movie?
I don't know.
Because Alfie counts all the matchsticks and they fall out at some point?
I don't know. That was okay. Just on the list of movies that inspired this one. The Hit from 1984. I've never heard of it. The Hit is a British road crime film starring Tim Roth, which is, I want to watch this. It seems fun. What is the Rotten Tomatoes for? 89% on Rotten Tomatoes for The Hit. Hard to trust, though. It's a pre-Rotten Tomatoes movie. Then we've got E.T., the extraterrestrial.
I don't see it.
You don't see it?
No.
And finally, Paper Moon. Maybe because the father and daughter are running around. The father and
daughter thing, yeah.
This kid has so much less personality. Can I tell you a pet peeve of mine?
Please.
Sure. Part of it's just me, but also this joke has been beaten to death. It's been way overused. Having kids swear in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that
like
happens for in a this? Joke.
Yeah, it happens twice in this.
I don't remember it.
Oh, yeah. It's the kid is like repeating just something that John David Washington said.
Oh, okay.
Like, we're going to play a game called Let's Kill the F and Whatever. And it's like the kids using the word without knowing its context.
Hmm.
But it's just, it seems like such a 90s joke that, like, I don't know. It's a pet peeve of mine that it keeps happening in movies.
The other interesting fact I just learned about this is that it was originally titled True Love.
Oh.
No, that's not good.
Which also doesn't make sense, and I'm glad they changed it.
Like, I got an idea. We're called True Romance. Like, it's been no.
Although I'm not sure the creator is a great title either.
No, it's not, because there's not much of the creator in this movie. Right. There's not some search for the. I mean, there is a search for the creator, but spoiler alert, that goes nowhere.
Yeah, right. It should have been called Alpha.
Or Alfie.
Alfie. There's already movies named Alfie, right?
What about Alpha O?
Yeah, Alpha O.
Alpha O, yeah.
Yeah, the Alfie, the movie, is like the about kind of like the drunk British guy. Remember that?
Oh, that then they remade that with Jude Law, didn't they?
Right.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. That's right. Alpha O. Good title.
All right. Anything else spoiler wise about the creator?
No.
We got it all out. Anybody changing their Letterboxd ranking? 3 and 2 3.5s.
No, I feel good about it.
I'm good where I am.
Same here. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next time. Until then, good.